Alright, so...
Nice. So this is a Ksav Ivri.
It's the development of the... from the Canaanite all the way through and how the letters develop.
Oh, you mean the letters develop over the course of time.
Right.
So there's no... no specific...
well, there is.
Ksav Ivri that goes back to Moshe Rabbeinu, is there?
No.
We don't know.
Well, maybe we'll just close the door.
Get a little more quiet in here.
Is this yours?
What's that? No. Mine's in my pocket. It's not one of ours.
Some
I hope. He'll figure it out if it's missing.
So on Chof Bezom and Aleph, we spoke about the Mishnah, if you recall, about using something that was used by the king himself and an object that was designated for the use of the king cannot be used by someone other than the king. And that led us to a whole discussion about Avishag. Because in Tanakh, Avishag is brought at the end of David HaMelech's life to warm him up because he was very cold. And the Gemara says that there were two options. Avishag was in favor of a marriage relationship. And she tried to push David to marry her. David resisted because he had already married 18 wives, so he had maxed out. And the Gemara wants to know how it would be legitimate, or shall we say, mutar al pidin, for David to have this very close relationship with Avishag outside of the framework of marriage. And although the Gemara goes out of its way to point out that David HaMelech never had an intimacy relationship with Avishag, a sexual relationship, but nevertheless, there's a violation of the Isur Yichud. And this was already long after the episode of Amnon and Tamar, when the Beis Din of David HaMelech had already enacted the prohibition of a Jewish man being alone with a single woman, a Jewish woman who's not married. And therefore David, insofar as he was alone in a private, intimate setting with Avishag, who slept in his bed at night, that would be a violation of the Isur Yichud. And the question therefore is, how could there be a heter for the Isur Yichud? And the other option seems so much more appealing, that he would divorce one of his 18 wives and then he could marry Avishag. I mean, she herself would have been very happy with that. He would no longer have to violate the Isur Yichud. And the Gemara comes to the conclusion, therefore, that in a choice situation between divorce, meaning a man divorcing one of his wives, and on the other hand, violating an Isur D'Rabbanan of Yichud, you know, you and I would have said, well, let's just go ahead with the divorce. You know, we don't believe in Catholic marriages, so he could divorce one of his wives. And then he'd be allowed to be alone with Avishag. So the Gemara says, no. It's to divorce a woman is not something that the Torah is happy about. So in the light of that introduction, let's see where we're up to in the Gemara. On Daf Chof Beis Amud Aleph, Omar Rav Shaman Bar Abba, and we are about, shall we say, two-thirds down the page. And let's see if we can figure out where to put the finger here. Omar Rav Shaman, I have my finger on the place. Are there any simonim here? I don't know. Let's count up from the the last of the wide lines, right? There are three different sections to the Gemara. And if you count that about 12, 13 lines up, hopefully you'll find a line that begins with the word Sha'ah. That's only if you have the same print that I have. In any event, Amar Av Shaman, or Shemen Bar Abba, Bo Ure'e, this is a classic Agadata, but this Agadata is about marriage and about its opposite, which is divorce. Come and see, Kamakoshin Gerushin, how much the Torah sees in its perspective the difficulty or the, you know, the amount we should avoid, to what extent we should try to avoid at all costs Gerushin. Sharei David HaMelech Hitiru Lo Liyached V'lo Hitiru Lo Ligarish. All the Rabbanim had to do was just to simply encourage him, David, to divorce one of his 18 wives, and then he would be allowed to live with Avishag. And instead of doing that, they said, you know what, we're going to allow you to be alone with Avishag, because again, his situation was very dire at that time. We said his body was very cold. And that would be preferable to divorcing one of his wives. So which is worse? Being alone with a woman and the Isur Yichud with a Pnuya is an Isur Drabbanon, or divorcing one of your wives? And the answer is, it's better to violate the Isur Yichud with a Pnuya than to divorce one of your wives. Now again, that doesn't mean the Torah is opposed to divorce. It means that the Torah is opposed to divorce in a situation where there's no reason why this woman deserves to be divorced. You know, why does she have to receive the get? Did she do anything wrong? Did she violate anything? Did she, heaven forbid, have a relationship, a fling with another man? Was she not sneistic? And this reminds us of a Mishnah in Masechta Gittin. The Mishnah in Gittin, on Daf Tzadi, records a machlokas between Beis Hillel and Beit Shammai. And one shita is, this is also the shita of Rabbi Akiva, that ein legarish isha, a person should not divorce his wife, ella im kein matzah ba ervas davar. It means that according to this approach, there has to be a very pressing reason for a man to divorce his wife. Again, if he went ahead and he divorced his wife, that's nothing. There's nothing to talk about. The divorce is valid and the get was given. But if he would come to us, to the rabbis, and ask, well, what does the Torah say? Should I divorce my wife or not? So according to this particular opinion in the Mishnah in Gittin, which I think is reflected here in our Gemara as well, is ein legarish. We tell him not to divorce his wife. Elam kein matzah ba'ervas davar. If she's guilty of some inappropriate behavior, then he should divorce his wife. But if there's no reason to guilt her of something that's in a sense undermines the marriage or undermines the harmony of the marriage, then we don't encourage. We're not in favor of divorce. And it seems that the poskim want to know, how do we poskim? It seems that there's a whole school of poskim, the poskim, that you're not allowed to divorce your wife unless there's a very pressing reason to do so. I don't know if that's a Torah prohibition, if it's a rabbinic prohibition, but at the end of the day, we don't want to allow and permit divorce. If there's something pressing and some need to do so, she, as we said before, she's guilty of some inappropriate behavior that undermines the fabric of the marriage, that's one thing. But otherwise, keep the marriage going. Again, there's another school of thought that says, you know, a man finds another woman, he wants to marry a different woman, he could divorce his first wife. He doesn't need any justification. But our Gemara that objects so passionately to divorce, and by the way, here's David Amel, he's married to how many wives?
18.
I mean, reduce it to 17 and then marry Avishag and you're back up to 18. Like, so what's... But still, from the woman's perspective, that she, you know, how's he going to flip a coin and decide which of his 18 wives he's going to, you know, where's the hatchet going to fall and she's going to get a divorce? There's no justification for that. I mean, she didn't, whoever you choose, you know, a rabbit out of a hat, I mean, she was not guilty of any inappropriate behavior. So therefore, in this situation, the Chachamim preferred that he would have this yichud situation of privacy with an unmarried woman, with Avisha. So this is the what we call in Hebrew the keresh kfitza. This is the springboard to a whole discussion here about divorce. Amar Rav Elazar Eliezer, kol amagareshes ishto harishona. Now it's interesting, we're going to have a lot of discussion here in the Gemara about the difference between the first marriage and the second marriage. And the general presentation, I'm not going to say there aren't any exceptions to this rule, but is that the first marriage is the main marriage. And if he divorces his first wife, is afilu mizbeach morid olav demos. It means the altar of God in the Beis HaMikdash is crying. And this is a dramatic way of saying how HaKadosh Baruch Hu is mitztayer, if he sort of identifies or empathizes with the tsar of a woman who's been married for the first time and now her husband divorces. So once again, the Meiri emphasizes we're talking about a man who's divorcing his wife without any without any urgent reason to do so. He decides he wants to divorce his wife. You know, he's had it with this marriage. You know, let me try something else. That's something which is not going to give him a good standing up in Shemayim. You know, the Mizbeach is meant to be that utensil on this earth that brings about kapara for a person. You know, it comes to sort of advocate in favor of a person like what we call a sanegar, a defense attorney. The Mizbeach is no longer interested in playing that role as a defense attorney on behalf of someone who flippantly, for whatever reason, you know, he woke up on the wrong side of the bed today, he gives his wife a divorce. Now, this first wife is called Eshes Ni'urim, which means the wife of his youth. I don't believe for one minute it matters how old he was when he married her. That's irrelevant. He might be what we call an alter bacha. You know, he's a 45-year-old Mira yeshiva student. And during the old days in Europe, the Mira guys used to get married at an older age. She's still called Eshes Ni'urim. And Eshes Ni'urim is a special relationship, a special bracha from the first marriage. And Gerushin is going to reduce this. It's going to sort of undermine that special, special relationship. Now the Marsha adds a point here, which is much more kodshim. Really, you have to know a lot of kodshim here, because the Gemara calls them Mizbeach. And he says the following, Kavonas hadvarim hi, she'eshes ne'urim, mitsuya lahavi kine ziva v'leida l'mizbeach. He says that what keeps the Mizbeach active, you know, is how many different karbonos does the Mizbeach have to be the instrument of bringing those karbonos. So it's very active in a first marriage. And why is that? Because there's something called Kine Ziva Veleda. And this has to do with the laws of a Zava, a woman who sees dam during certain times of the month, and she has to bring a karbon, or later after she gives birth. But by the way, on Friday, right before Shabbos, our daughter-in-law gave birth. We have another grandson. So the Mizbeach is waiting for her, for my daughter-in-law, to bring a karbon. But we don't have the Mizbeach right now. But when the Mizbeach stood, then during the course, or within the framework of a young marriage, the Mizbeach is kept very busy. Valyidei Gerushin, as a result of the divorce, nismatu karbonos elu. I mean, she no longer has to bring a karbon ziva, and certainly not a karbon leda, because she's no longer married. So all these laws are irrelevant. So that's how the Marsha adds this extra curveball here, why the Mizbeach is crying. You know, you and I would have said, well, if the Mizbeach has less business, then maybe the Mizbeach should take it easy, you know, take a vacation I don't know, in En Gedi, but maybe take a plane to Mexico. I don't know where. But no, the Mizbeach wants to work hard and on behalf of Klal Yisrael, and in the framework of a young marriage, the Mizbeach is working overtime. Now the Gemara sees two psukim in Sefer Malachi. This is really at the very end of Nevi'im, which if you relate these two psukim together, because they're continuous, you'll come to the conclusion that the first pasuk is talking about the Mizbeach crying, and the second pasuk is talking about divorce. And why are these two psukim next to each other? And the answer is because when the individual divorces his wife for no reason, for no ample reason, then the Mizbeach is crying. The first pasuk says the following: Vizo sheinis ta'asu kasos dim'a es Mizbeach Hashem b'chiva anoka. So clearly what's happening here is the word dim'a, which means tears, is used to describe the Mizbeach Hashem. So the Mizbeach Hashem is in a state of bechi and anoka, different synonyms for the words crying and weeping. Me'enod pnos el mincha, because the Mizbeach no longer is turned towards the mincha. The Karban Mincha is a special Karban that brings a kiruv, a closeness between Hashem and the people of Israel. Lokachas Ratzon Miyedchem. And that Mincha represents symbolically Ratzon. Ratzon means a pacification, a close, intimate relationship between Knesset Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And with the destruction of the Migdash and the termination of the work of the Mizbeach, the crying here and the weeping, the mourning, is over the fact that there's no longer a Mizbeach to function as that intermediary between Knesset Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is called Ratzon or Ritzui. In the very next pasuk, it says, "Va'amartem al ma." You might ask, what brought about this situation where the Mizbeach is weeping? Al ki Hashem heid bein cha ubein eshes nurecha. Because God is testifying about the relationship, the broken relationship between you and your early wife. Early wife meaning from your childhood, the first wife. Asher atah bagadeta ba. In other words, usually if a man divorces his wife, it's because, chas v'shalom, let's say she was disloyal to him. But here, he's the one who's being disloyal to her. V'hi chevratecha, and she is your good friend. V'yeshes brisecha, and she established a covenant with you. That was her first marriage. The Chazal always say that if a woman gets married for the first time, it's a covenant, a special bris relationship. And she did not violate that bris. She was very loyal to that bris. And you went ahead in a very disloyal way and you delivered to her a bill of divorce. Chazal say that when a woman and a man get married, the Shekhinah, the very presence of God, is there. And in a sense, through this divorce, you are rejecting the presence of God. And the Mizbeach, which represents the presence of God, the Shekhinah in the Beis HaMikdash, is now weeping over the fact that you divorced your wife. Omar Rabbi Yochanan of Itamar Rabbi Loza, the second statement. And this is about the tragic death of one's wife. We're going to soon see the flip side, about the tragic death of one's husband, that a married woman becomes widowed. So Chanan, we're on page Chav Beis, Omar Aleph, we're about two-thirds of the way down. And the Gemara says the following: Ein ishto shel adam mesa, Ella im kein mevakshim imenu mamon v'einlo. The Gemara is now asking the following metaphysical question, and everything has to be developed here on a more symbolic way. What sin, what terrible avera would bring about this tragedy, this catastrophe in a person's life, which the Gemara is going to get into detail about how catastrophic it is when a man never loses his wife? And the sin that's pinpointed here is the possibility of giving tzedakah. When a person takes it upon himself, which is called a neder, a pledge, to give tzedakah, and then when the charity, the organization, comes to collect, you know, you took a pledge, live up to your pledge, V'elo, and he turns them down, and he says, I don't have the money to pay up for my own chov. Now, exactly what that means, why he doesn't have money to pay, is not clear. It could be that what's going on here is that when he made the pledge, he really didn't have the money to pay. He was a thief. I don't know if you know this. There used to be a phrase in English when I was a kid, maybe some of you would remember it, that if you work as a busboy or a waiter in a hotel, the best tips come from the mafiosos, from the racketeers. They're the most genuine, generous tippers. Sometimes a gazlan, someone who's guilty of thievery, will be the first one to make a pledge because he tries to show the people that he likes to give big bucks. But at the end, it could be that when the organization comes to collect, he throws them out, either because he wasn't successful in stealing that money or because he doesn't want to part with his money. In any event, we're talking about some sort of a sin, and the punishment for this sin is going to be the death of his wife. Shenemar, where do we see such a thing? Apostle Mishle, v'im ein lechol l'shalim, if they come around to collect your funds, and lo and behold, you turn your pockets inside out, you don't have the money to pay, lama yikach mishkavcha mitachtecha, what they'll take from underneath you is mishkavcha, like the bed that you're sleeping in. And this is a symbolic reference to your wife. They'll, when he says they'll take her away, it means the divine judgment up in the heavens will have it that your wife will die because you were guilty of this sin of putting yourself into a pledge situation for a charity and you end up violating that pledge. So I was curious to know, what is the quid pro quo relationship here? You know, we have a principle called mida keneged mida, that when a person is guilty of one sin, he'll be punished in a way that this punishment fits the crime here. It seems like the crime here is that he had illegitimately taken over certain funds, he pledged those funds, and now he doesn't have the ability or the interest to pay up this obligation or this commitment to pay up. What does that have to do with the death of his wife, which is a terrible calamity in his life? I don't see the relationship here, except that if you look at the word in Mishle, it says yikach mitachtecha. Yikach means to take something away from you. So it could be that this person took money that was not his. He stole money from someone else. And at the end of the day, he wasn't able to live up to his commitments because the Torah didn't allow him to pay up his debts to charity with stolen goods. But in any event, he was guilty of stealing something. So as a result, something is going to be taken away from him. And what object could be taken away from him? Again, he's in a situation where he's not even able to pay his bills. So what, are we going to take away some money from him? He doesn't have much money in the bank. They take away his most precious possession, and that's his wife. V'yomar Rabbi Yochanan, kol I adam shemesa ishta rishona ki ilu chorev beis hamigdash b'yoma. A person should have the greatest yearnings and the greatest feelings for the Beis HaMikdash. Imagine if you lived at the time in the Beis HaMikdash and you would go in and go out, you would feel and sense the presence of the Shekhinah, you'd be able to bring your contributions and your korbanos, you saw the Kohanim Bavodasam and the Levim and all the beauty and the grandeur of the Beis HaMikdash. This was your life. And you saw in front of your eyes the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. What could be more catastrophic to a sensitive and a person who's linked up with Kedusha, with sanctity, with God? Here's the house of God going up in smoke in front of his eyes. I remember my Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, whose entire life was dedicated to appreciating the Beis HaMikdash and Kodshim. And I remember when he used to give shiurim about Yom HaKippurim, once a year he would give us a shiur before Yom Kippur about the avoda that went on in the Beis HaMikdash, and you could see how much he yearned and crave the kiyum, the fulfillment of that avoda. All the Mishnayos and Yuma and all the Gemaras and the Sugyas, the complexity, the Shnei Asa'irim and the Gorolos, the Sol Hashem, Sol Azazel, etc., etc. And I remember in his older years, they told him, the doctors, that he had to eat on Yom Kippur. And when he wanted to express to the doctors that it's impossible for him to eat on Yom Kippur, he said these words: "For me to eat on Yom Kippur would be like seeing the Beis HaMikdash destroyed in front of my eyes." That was his phrase. So the Gemara says that the experience of the catastrophe of the loss of one's wife is as if he saw with his eyes the Beis HaMikdash going up in smoke. And once again, we're going to see this from the contiguity between two verses in the book of Yechezkel. The first verse says, "Ben Adam, hineni lokeach mimcha es machmad einecha b'magefa, lo tispod v'lo tivkeh v'lo tavo dim'ascha." This pasuk is describing the great tragedy of the loss of the Beis HaMikdash. The loss of the Beis HaMikdash is considered a very personal, individual experience of loss, of destruction, of mourning. That's why it's written in the singular, "Hineni lokeach mimcha." Every Jew has this personal connection to the Mikdash, and if he sees the Churban and the Bayis, then it's as if God is taking something from him. And what is God taking from him? Machmad einecha, the most beautiful desire of your eyes. There's nothing more glorious to your vision, to your eyes, than the perception of the Beis HaMikdash. And not only that, as a result of the Churban, where we have the exile of the Jewish people, they're sent into slavery, into Golus, into exile, lo tispod, lo tifki, you won't even have the ability to cry. And according to some of the Mefarshim, what Yechezkel wants to indicate is that no matter how much you cry, you'll never be able to mourn sufficiently over the loss of the Beis HaMikdash, because you've lost the machmad einecha, the most desirable thing in your eyes. The very next pasuk says, "Vadaber el ha'am baboker, vatomos ishti ba'erev." Here, Yechezkel Hanavi gives a mashal of the loss of his wife. He's out there in the morning, full blast. He's a Navi, he's very interactive as a leader with his people, and that very evening his wife dies on him. And the rest of the parsha there in Yechezkel is about his avelus, his mourning over the loss of his wife. And the pasuk says, "Hineni mechalel es mikdashi." He's saying that the loss of Machmad Ha'ayin, which is the Beis HaMikdash, which is the Kodesh, that has now been desecrated, is like the loss of his wife. He uses the loss of his wife to explain the great, intense mourning and grief that he experiences through the Chilul of Kedusha, of the Machmad Einecha, that ultimate Kedusha, the sanctity of all sanctities, and that is the Beis HaMikdash. The Marashah wants to comment here on the analogy between the loss of one's wife, the first wife, and the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. And he says the following: even though a man who loses his wife never can get remarried, but he says, "Li'eshes ne'urim ein tmura." According to the Marashah, the second wife, as great as she may be, is not going to fill that gap. She's not able to achieve that, shall we say, that existential relationship that existed between him and his first wife, v'nimtza shenisavala lel li'olam, that in truth, even after he gets remarried, he still, in some part of his heart, is experiencing mourning over the loss of his first wife. He'll never really fully get over it. And he says the same thing applies to the Beis HaMikdash. Now, with regard to other relatives, Chazal have a principle that Hamisa Hames Mishtakach Min Alev, that over the course of time, one forgets a little bit about that relative, that close relative that was taken away from him. So that the Avelus now goes in a descending order. It's no longer as intense. And for example, in the case of Eov, he lost his relatives, those tsaros, he was in a terrible state of mourning, but as he went through life, he was able to get back on his feet. But in the case of the loss of one's first wife, it's never really replaceable. It's such a tremendous tragedy. It's like the loss of the Beis HaMikdash. We can never mourn enough of the Beis HaMikdash. That's why, by the way, Eicha, which we recite on Tisha B'Av, of the loss of the Mikdash, is written as an acrostic in the Aleph Beis. Whenever we have an acrostic in Aleph Beis, the indication is there's never an end. And the Rambam writes in Hilchas Avelus that when it comes to the loss of one of one's close relatives, there's an end to the period of mourning. And you can't overdo it, says the Rambam. But when it comes to the loss of the Beis HaMikdash, the sky's the limit. There's no limit whatsoever. It's infinite. It's ongoing. And there's never too much. He describes the tragedy of the loss of one's first wife as Olam Choshach Ba'ado. The world becomes dark for him. His wife is the light of his life. Light represents happiness and joy. Night always represents fear, despair. With the morning light, as it dissipates throughout a room, it elevates the people in the room. And that's what a person's wife does for him. But with her passing, darkness falls upon his life. Shenemar, as it says in Eov, Or chashach bi'olo v'nero olov yid'och. The word olo, which literally means his tent, is always a symbolic representation of his wife. A woman is called a tent. Like, for example, when Rivka comes into the tent of Yitzchak, it's considered that she is now the woman and the tent. Or we speak about the oil of Sarah Imenu and so forth and so on. So, Or Chashach Bi'olo, he says, the light now became darkened in my tent. And what is my tent? It's a symbolic referral to his wife. And with the loss of his wife, darkness falls upon his life. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina Omar, Psi Osov Miskatros. He becomes so weak and so full of anguish that it's hard for him to walk. His psios, his steps, are very short. You know, he takes short steps. He doesn't have that motivation in life, you know, the excitement of life that would push him to run. You know, if you ever see a person running, then you know he's got something motivating him. But if you see a person who schleps along, his life his actions are not motivated. And what motivates a person is the joy and the happiness of a marriage. Shenemar, again a pasuk in Eov, Yetzru Tzade Ono. Ono is a word that refers to mourning, right? If you know, the first stage of mourning is called an onen. And tzade, tzad, are the steps of a person. And Yetzru means they are shortened. So shortened are the steps of the mourning. And Rabbi Avo Amar, he gives a third simile to describe the mourning and the grief of the loss of one's first wife. He says, Atsoso nofelis. In other words, everything that he tries to do, all his enterprises, he takes upon himself new commitments. He wants to discover a cure for cancer, right? He's an older man and his wife died on him. Then forget it, he won't be matzliach. Shenemar vitashlicheu atsoso, as a result of the death of his wife, all of his plans and his enterprises, his future dreams, are lost. I once heard from my Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik, that he said that after Sarah dies, at the beginning of Parshas Chayei Sarah, you'll see almost nothing about Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu plays almost no role whatsoever. He's totally passive. After Sarah's death, the only thing we learn about Avraham is that he sends Eliezer on a shlichus to find a wife for his son Yitzchak. But the active leader of people, of nations, that the role that Avraham played is completely gone. He sort of sinks into anonymity from the moment of the death of his wife. It's a whole different thing. The covenant of of HaKadosh Baruch Hu with Avram was not just with Avram, but was with Avram and Sarah as one unit. And when they function together as one unit, Chazal say Avram Megayaris HaNoshim and Sarah Megayaris HaNoshim, they work together as a team. That's why today, I'm sure you all know this, when a synagogue or an organization tries to find a recruit a leader, almost inevitably when they invite that leader to spend a Shabbos with them, for example, and to see what he's all about, they will always want to interview the wife, because they realize it. And this is especially true in the Kiruv movement. Like you send someone out to, I don't know where, you know, out to the boondocks in South Dakota. It's a couple. It's always a unit. And she has to be there with him. Now, she may not be a public speaker, but she has her own ways of having an impact. I remember my wife and I in our youth were sent on a mission to the Soviet Union event. And when we came to Steingart, he was one of the refuseniks that the Russians didn't like him too much. But he actually had shiurim going on in his house. Baruch Hashem, his whole family is here in Israel, grandchildren, great-grandchildren. And I remember it was right before Pesach, and I had prepared a whole list of shiurim, and the women said, "We want to hear from the Rebbetzin." So my wife is not doesn't consider herself a public speaker, but she said, "Okay, let's learn about how to prepare the house for Pesach." And the women loved it. You know, here we were in the Soviet Union, you know, in Moscow, and they were soaking it up. You never know when a wife will play that role. And for a person who lost his wife to take on new enterprises and new dreams that he wants to fulfill in his days on earth, very, very difficult situation. V'tashlifu atzosa. Once again, I have a comment here, the Marsha, and he says the following. Hanan, I wonder if I could trouble you, it would be a gewaldige chesed, although it's going to be too hot. Yeah, maybe fill it up half with hot water and then add a drop, just a drop of cold water so I could drink it. I'm just push it on. So I wanted to share with you the Marsha. The Marsha says the following, based on a sugya in Masechta Yevamos. Ha'isha ozeres li adam, how does a woman help her husband? Well, we call it... what's it called in English? The power behind the throne. And he says the following: Al Yedeshi Osalos called Sochov. Thank you so much. She prepares all his needs. You know, he doesn't have time to cook his food if he's a very busy man. Again, all this has sociological implications here, because today sometimes the women are more busy than the men. But in the classic old time, you know, where the men were out there busy and the women had to make sure that everything was prepared for their husbands. And the Gemara says, Shehi me'ira es enov umamidoso al raglov. She lightens up his eyes, which is both physical, because by giving him sustenance and food to eat, he's able to use his eyes, otherwise he's fasting and he's weak. But on more important, on a psychological level, that he now feels uplifted by the happiness and the joy that he shares everything with his wife. And the Gemara says that she sets him up on his feet. Without her, it's hardly possible for him to stand up on his feet. And therefore, when she dies, so first and foremost, choshech me'ar panav. Choshech me'ar panav means the light of his eyes is darkened. He has no one to take care of his house. You know, you walk into a house of an old bachelor, and chances are you'll find spiderwebs, you know, stuff. The place looks like a wreck, like Shrek. V'chein, and furthermore, psiosov miskasros. He's no longer able to stand on his own feet. And when he walks very weak with a very, you know, he takes little steps. Da'ainu laharchik mi beso. It's very hard for him to get far from his house. You know, if he should make sure that he lives across the street from some sort of shopping mall where he can take care of all of his needs by just crossing the streets. Because he no longer has a wife to take care of all of his needs. And the third description here, which was that of Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Avo, that soso nofeles, mishum shekshaa ishva isha yachad, when a husband and wife are together, the shechina beinehem, the shechina is with them, it dwells with them in their marriage, v'yatzas Hashem hitakum, and then they get the wisdom, the counsel of God who's with them, v'yato, but now he lost his wife, nistalik Hashem beinehem, God is no longer with him. The enkan odat sas Hashem. He doesn't have that etzah of Hashem. Omer Rabba Bar Barchanam Rabbi Yochanan, a man and a woman is kasha lezavgam kekriyas yamsuf. You've probably heard this Gemara a dozen, if not five dozen times, but here's the original. This is where it comes from. That to put a husband and a wife together is as difficult as splitting the yamsuf. You know, they always say about children that they look at their parents and they say, where's the shidduch here? You know, my father, my mother, so different. How did they get together? You know, it's kriyas yamsuf, because a man is different than a woman and vice versa. And it takes a lifetime and more to get to to overcome those differences. However, the Gemara is going to differentiate between the first marriage and the second marriage. So hold your horses, because this statement of the Gemara, which most people assume applies to any marriage, is not necessarily so. It might only apply to a second marriage, not to a first marriage. Let's see. Shenemar, where's the comparison between marriage and splitting the Red Sea? It all adheres in a pasuk in Tehillim. David HaMelech in Samaches says the following: Elokim Moshiv Yechidim Boisa Motzi Asirim Bakosharos. Now let's go backwards here. The second part of this verse is talking about taking someone out of a jail. Motzi Asirim. Asirim are people who are incarcerated, Bakosharos. And God takes them out with a great, you know, kosheros means some sort of very dramatic supernatural experience. And let's go back now to the beginning of the pasuk. The beginning of the pasuk says, "Moshiv yechidim boisa," to take a yachid, an individual, and bring him bias, bring him into a house, a home. That means bring him with a wife. It's like motzi asirim. It's like taking someone out of jail. And the Gemara says that Al Tikri, don't read it Bekosharos Ela Bechi Veshiros, which means we're going to take apart the word Bekosharos etymologically and we're going to split it into two. And it means that if you want to take a Yachid at the beginning of the pasuk, an individual, and bring him in one bais together with someone else into one home and form a unit, a marriage unit, it's like taking Bnei Yisrael out of Mitzrayim. Because this reference to Motzi Asirim, who are these Asirim, who are these individuals who are in jail, who are incarcerated, they are the Jewish nation who were put into jail in Mitzrayim. And Yatzu Bebechi Veshira, and they go out of Mitzrayim with crying. These are tears of joy. Veshira, and the song of praise. So that Shira was the song that they sang when? At Kriyas Yamsuf. Not at the Exodus itself, but a week later. Okay. So the Gemara asks the following question. Eini, are you really serious about this? You're telling me it's so difficult to put a man together with a woman in a marriage relationship? We have another statement of Rabbi Yehuda in the name of Rav. These were contemporaries, of course, of Rabbi Yochanan, who made the first statement about Kriyas Yamsuf. Our boy Yom Kodim Yitzius Avlad, Bas Kol Yotzeis Vomeres, Bas Ploni, Leploni. 40 days before the formation of the conceived ovum, there's already a baskol. There's already a heavenly voice that goes out and declares that the daughter of so and so will be married to so and so. So it seems like it's natural that this man should marry this woman. It's already built into the creation, even before the so-called Yetzirah Savlad. Now, what exactly is Yetzirah Savlad? So it comes out that 40 days before Kodem Gemar HaYitzira, Ein Yitzira, Yitzira Savlai, the Gemara said, so far, Boim Yom. According to Chazal, again, you can Google this and see what the scientists say about this, the first 40 days from conception is a very kind of iffy, you know, it hasn't yet become a viable being. It's only after day 40. This has a lot of relevance to abortion issues for the sake of saving lives. You know, there's almost no issue of abortion during the first 40-day period after conception. Now, I'm not getting into that issue. That's way beyond my knowledge. But anyway, first 40 days. So already before the Vlad is already got a tzura to it, you know, it's already a viable being. Even before that, there's already an announcement that this Vlad will be married to this Vlad. So it's already built into the natural course of events. Lokasha, there's no contradiction. Ha bezivug rishon, ha bezivug sheni. When Rabbi Yochanan said it's very difficult for a man and a woman to get married together, you know, that's like splitting the yamsuf. That's a zivug sheni. That's a second marriage. As far as the zivug rishon is concerned, no sweat, because that's already been built into nature, and the heavenly voice has already declared who will marry who. So I have a somewhat long footnote to share with you on this, but we'll see how time will allow us. Amar Rav Shmuel bar Nachman, lekol yesh tmura, anything that you lose can be replaced in this world, chutz, with one exception, may eshes ne'urim, from his first wife. He could never replace her. Shenemar, because the pasuk says in Yeshayahu Anovi, the eshes ne'urim kitimais. It's almost like a question, a rhetorical question. This, it's impossible, meaning the love of your youth, would you ever find her repulsive? You can never find her repulsive. Now, let's put the statement of Yeshayahu HaNavi in its context. He's talking to God, and he's telling HaKadosh Baruch Hu that God, with a capital H, should return to Israel, meaning he should reestablish his close relationship with the people of Israel. Why? Because that relationship can be classified, described as Eishes Ni'urim. And even if his wife, meaning Knesset Yisrael, who are always compared in Shir HaShirim, for example, and elsewhere, to a bride, even if she doesn't deserve that close relationship, because perhaps she did something inappropriate, but Timais, will she be absolutely repulsive in your eyes? She can never be repulsive in your eyes. Realize that she can never be replaced. She's your Eishes Ni'urim. You can never find her repulsive. You can never find her that she should be rejected and therefore replaced by someone else. She can never be replaced by someone else. So Knesset Yisrael, as the Eishes Ni'urim, can never be replaced. Masnile, we learned in the name of Rabbi Yehuda, who said to Rabbi Yitzchak, okay, we're going to have here a whole dialogue back and forth between Rabbi Yehuda and his son Rabbi Yitzchak Bray. So Rabbi Yehuda turns to his son. Now sometimes, I don't know, you make a comment to your son about your marriage, it's not such a good idea. He says, Ein ada motzi koras ruach ela be'ishta rishona. He says that all my koras ruach, all my happiness and my joy in life comes from my first wife. And he was referring to his own wife. And the Mefarshim explain that there's a special metaphysical relationship or existential relationship between a man and his first wife. She understands his nature. He reveals to her all of his desires. And she knows how to deal with him or interact with him in a relationship that reflects his particular midos, his nature, his teva, his taivas, his desires and his cravings. The second wife, that's a different relationship. He doesn't have the gumption to reveal to her all of his inner feelings. He doesn't have that existential closeness. She doesn't know really what he's all about. You know, what essentially are his will, and his desires, so that she could deal with him on that level. Therefore, the koras ruach that a person finds, the fulfillment of his own existential being, is in the relationship with his first wife. Shenemar, as the pasuk says in Mishle, Yehi mekarcha baruch. Mekarcha is the original wife, and it will be blessed. Usmach me eshes ne'urech on the top of dafchav beis on the beis. The simcha and the koras ruach that he gets is from his first wife. That's what he's telling his son, Rabbi Yitzchak. Amalo, so Rabbi Yitzchak turns to him, to his father, Rabbi Yehuda, and he says to him, Kigon man. In other words, who is this woman that brings such joy to a person? Amalo, Kigon imecha, like your mother. So in other words, in the entire presentation here, Rabbi Yehuda is using his own wife as the prime example, the paradigm, of a woman who brings you all of this joy in life. So the Gemara says, did Rabbi Yitzchak buy into this, the son? After all, Aini, is this true? When they spoke to Rabbi Yehuda about his wife, he used to quote a pasuk to his son. And that pasuk was a little bit less than favorable about a woman. And for Makrile, he would quote the following verse, Rabbi Yehuda to Rabbi Yitzchak, to his son. This is a pasuk in Koheles. Motzi ani, Shlomo Melch writes in Koheles, I find mar mi mavis as a isha. I find a wife to be more bitter than death itself. He mitzodim v'charamim liba. Like she is, so to speak, captures my entire feeling, my emotions. It's a terrible thing. My whole heart is completely dead as a result of this marriage. The Amar Lo, so Rabbi Yitzchak, when he heard this from his father, he said to his father in all naivete, he says, "Kigo man, can you give me an example of a woman that's being described in this pasuk in Koheles that she's worse than death itself?" V'yomer lo, Rabbi Yehuda says, "Kigon imcha, your mother, she's worse than death." So what's going on? On one hand, he tells his son that the Eishes Niurim is unbelievable. She brings such pleasure and joy to his life. On the other hand, when he describes a woman who fits the bill of Mar Mimaves in Koheles, he says, "That's your mother, my wife."
Typical marriage.
What?
Typical marriage.
Yeah. Right, this is the ups and downs of marriage. So the Gemara answers, Mitkaf tkifa, ibure ma'abra b'mila. On the one hand, she was a very, very harsh woman. She was a very staunch, a very tough lady, as we would say. That's called mitkaf tkifa. Tokif always means someone who's, he doesn't allow you to move an inch, very demanding, and you have to, you have to live up to the standards and unyielding, and you'll be punished and so forth and so on. And that's like death itself, because if you're married to a woman who is so tough and so demanding and unyielding. However, ibure ma'abra b'mila, which means that she has the quality of what we call ma'vira al midoseha. Meaning that even though she gets all, in Yiddish we say tzehitz, she gets all fired up and she demands this standard, nevertheless, you can easily quiet her down and she'll overcome any anger or any excessive passion that she had. V'nochal l'ratzos, and it's easy to have a ritzui, to pacify her, to calm her down and tell her that we tried, we did what we could. And she accepts that, and we move on in life. And that brings me a tremendous amount of pleasure. So when Rabbi Yehuda describes his wife, the mother of Rabbi Yitzchak, in two different ways, and it seems like absolutely mutually exclusive, they're both correct. On the one hand, she's tough like death. I mean, she can drive you up a wall. They say that in psychological terms, very often in a marriage relationship, a married woman plays the role of a super ego. She's the mashgiach over him. Making sure he doesn't move one inch to the left, one inch to the right. Like for example, I speak very often in the shul. I tell a story. Honestly, I couldn't care one iota about the details of the story. I mean, all I care about is when you get the message of the story. And my wife, after I get off the thing, she says to me,
it didn't happen like that, it happened like that. You know what I'm saying? You gotta be committed to truth, you know. Emes Levito. Omer Rav Shmuel Bar Oni Mishmei Derav, we're almost finished. Isha Golam Hi. A woman is like a potential. You know, there was a British philosopher, I think his name was, what was his name? Anyway, do you remember the phrase tabula rosa? You know, that a human being is like a tabula. It's like a tablet that's empty and you just can carve on it. It's so much potential. A woman also is like she's like a tabula. She's like a utensil that has to be formed. And with whom does she form that ultimate personality? Eino koreses bris elamisha saw kli. It's her first husband that breaks her in, so to speak. And then that has to be understood physically because she was not married before. So this is the intimacy of a first marriage, and she becomes, so to speak, a kli. You know, her body biologically changes. And that's called in the Pasuk in Yeshaya Shenemar, Ki bo alayach osayach Hashem tzvak oshmo. That means, as a result of Be'ila, which is the intimate relationship, the first relationship is osayach. She's changed, she's transformed. She becomes like a kli in a sense, because until that point, you know, it's a closed thing. So therefore, when the Navi Yeshaya wants to describe HaKadosh Baruch Hu's relationship with Klal Yisrael, he describes it like a husband with a first wife, that God has the impact on us. You know, he etches out our personality. What's his name? John Smith? I forget his name right now. Anyway, Tana, we learned in a Braisa, Ein Ish Meis Ella Leishto. V'ein Isha Mesa El Baila. Now this is a very, very profound statement. I'm not here to defend the Gemara here, but when a person dies and he leaves children behind, obviously the children are in a state of mourning. But the Gemara says that state of mourning is nothing compared to the spouse who survives the loss of his spouse. And it goes in both directions. Who's going to suffer the most tsar, the most anguish and mourning and grief over the loss of a man? It's his wife, the widow. And who's going to suffer the most anguish, the most profound grief over the loss of a woman? It's going to be the baal. So as much as the children are, you know, sitting in you know, they're sitting in avelus, but it's the most profound level of avelus is that of the surviving spouse. I remember my father, Zichron Levroch, when he would officiate at a funeral or sometimes at an unveiling of either a woman who was widowed or a man who was widowed, he would always read a poem. I forgot, you know, one of the poets wrote a poem, "If I go first and you remain," you know, in other words, what is it like to remain behind if you lose your spouse? And where do we find in Tanakh a proof, a source for this concept, Shenemar Vayomos Elimelech Ish Naomi, which means that the Tanakh describes the death, the loss of Elimelech. And the Torah, the Tanakh adds two extra words. Ish, the husband of Naomi. We know from many verses, and that's the whole theme of Rus, is that Elimelech was married to Naomi. So why did the Torah have to, why did the Tanakh have to emphasize this? And the answer is, because Ish Naomi, who was this loss of Elimelech suffered by? It was by Naomi. Now that's going one way, of a woman who was widowed. What about the opposite? V'eino Isha Mesa Ella Labaila, where do we find that the loss of a woman is most acutely suffered by the husband? Where's the source for that in Tanakh? Shenemar. And this is the verses that we're reading these days about the relationship, the special unique marriage relationship between Yaakov and his wife Rachel. And Yaakov declares, "Vani bevoi mipadan mesa alai Rachel." She died on me, so to speak. Her death was upon me. And what the emphasis here the nuance of alai mesa. Alai mesa means that I suffered as a result of a death much more than anyone else. And he's talking to Yosef about the loss of his own mother. So Mirz Hashem, tomorrow I want to just embellish this a little bit before we start. We saw the real Nukoi sugi of Som Tassim Alecha Melech, Shetehe Maso Alecha, what does it mean, a Mas Melech? We mentioned in the Mishnah that you know there's certain things that if the Melech is involved, engaged in certain mundane activities, we're not allowed to watch him because that's lowering our awe of the king. So that'll be for tomorrow. But Bli Neder, before we start the Shia tomorrow, I just want to say one or two things to embellish with the Marsha that we didn't get a chance to see on the Agadita that we did today. So I wish everyone a great day, and we shall all be zochet to many, many years of happy, happy marriage. Ad mea v'yesrim.
This should have been really sent to the entire Gehila about Am Yisrael, about Shalom Bayis.
Correct.
Sorry, it was like a whole Musar little capsule of Shalom Bayis in a half hour.
Right.
Really.
Unbelievable how Chazal... see the significance of a marriage relationship. We don't appreciate this Chazal in its historical context. The Goyim, back in the day, today again, we live in the age of romance and novels and poetry and so forth, but back in the day, this kind of thing was not so popular, that a man's life revolves so much and depends so much on his wife. It's a Jewish hashkafa, which... You don't find them on
the last part. It explains, as I recall, understand the reason for the availability for a spouse is only is a month. It's because the spouse doesn't need to have it so stringent for a whole year because he internally feels
it. He feels it. It's natural.
But for the child,
he needs to be reminded for a full year. That's true. That's true. That's why even for the Churban HaBayis, really, according to Ikra Aloch, it's only 9 days. I mean, again, we've expanded it. How can you take Churban HaBayis and reduce it to 9 days? But the answer is we should be feeling the Churban HaBayis the entire year. We should have that natural feeling, that Machmad Einecha, the glorious, beautiful charm of our eyes has been taken away from us. Unfortunately, we live in a generation where very few people feel that. They don't... Those who spend time learning Kudshin... And they get involved in understanding the mechanism of the Beis HaMikdash and how nuanced and detailed it is, and every single aspect of the Avodah, and even the laws of the building of the Beis HaMikdash, and where everything was structured, and Misat HaMidos, and they have more of a taste and a flavor of the loss of the Beis HaMikdash. But for most of us, we're so involved in daily, secular, mundane activities, who has time to even think about the Beis HaMikdash? It sounds like a nice dream, Okay, my friends, everyone should have a great day.
The question why a husband, the spouse only does 30 days, versus a year, this is the kavod for the parent. So you do it an entire year.